Ruthless Aggression. I am Pierce, joined by Rob and Chris. We are currently 6 days out, by the time you listen to this, 5 days out from SummerSlam, MetLife Stadium, East Rutherford, New Jersey. I decided last night I'm not going, you know, not doing the whole take Amtrak up to Newark. And I don't understand, Chris, maybe you can explain this to me. Why the fuck is there not just a stop that can take you straight from Penn Station or straight from Newark to the stadium? Why do I have to, like, go to Secaucus and I have to make it all weird and just it makes no sense?
It's never made any sense to me. And the only time that I remember them ever actually having a line that goes right to the stadium is exclusively on a Sunday, which, yeah, I get that because of the Giants and Jets. But, like, hey, like, you could probably run that line for special occasions up in East Rutherford
the whole thing is you have to, like, specifically it only goes from MetLife to Secaucus Station.
Yeah.
It's not like you can take it, like, straight into the city, or it can go to Newark for anyone that wants to, like, transfer at Newark. So essentially from Philly, I would have to, like, take Amtrak to Newark, NJ Transit from Newark to Secaucus, and then this train from Secaucus to, like, that's enough. That's a lot.
It is. And, like, most of the hubs, they all go into Newark Penn, which is whatever, fine. Then, you know, you go to Secaucus and then you have to go to do all that. It's all accessible there. But, like, why can't you just access it from anywhere else? I don't understand it either. It's never made a lick of sense.
Public transportation on the East Coast doesn't make sense. I never thought I would I would love the CTA as much as I do right now. Like, it wilds me out. But as I sit here watching F1 because this race got delayed, fucking hell. We're here to talk about SummerSlam next week. Tons of big matches on the show. They released the cards for the nights, so we'll go through each night individually. We'll just keep pushing off 2009 is not great. Like, it's not like you really got, like, hey man, like, remember what happened? Like, the only thing in the summer that, like, I really love to, you know, go through the punk Jeff Hardy stuff, and then Rey Mysterio and Jericho. Everything else,
yes.
Everything else doesn't fucking matter. But I mean, we'll get back to it because things happened this week that are well more important than even talking about SummerSlam, and that's the death of Hulk Hogan. It's something that has his illnesses have been talked about and been rumored about. You've heard Bubba the Love Sponge say stuff. You've heard Jimmy Hart lying ass. Oh no, Hulk! Hulkster is good, brother. We were having karaoke the other day. He sounded amazing, brother. Some fucking Mickey Mouse ass. But, like, we've been hearing word that he's not good and that something's coming very soon. And then it happened on Thursday morning. People have made it seem like it's this complicated conversation, and I would like to say it's absolutely not, of course, but it's not complicated in the way that a lot of people are saying that it's complicated. It's not complicated. Yes, it's not complicated because we are about to talk about a man who said that he is a self-admitted racist and that everybody can be a little racist at times. Yes, we are talking about a man that was intentionally in his last days, not in his daughter's life, as she just had a child and had no intention of being. Yes, we're talking about a man that was anti-union, that turned his back on a lot of his peers, that shaded a lot of his peers, that was very self-centered. We're going to talk about all of that. But what's not complicated in all of that, while all that stuff is not complicated, what also is not complicated is where Hulk Hogan places in the pantheon of pop culture. I think, you know, one thing that we can't gloss over and we can't ignore, and because of who he is, we have to acknowledge that Hulk Hogan is responsible for a lot of how America runs to this day, for better or for worse. He absolutely is. He is that big of a figure in pop culture, in professional wrestling, whether you like it or you don't. So we're going to talk about all of it. We're going to work through all of the feelings in this obituary of Hulk Hogan. Where were you guys when you got the news, and what was the initial feeling?
I was I was just in my bed on that morning, and I was just going through my usual routine. And honestly, like, my routines have really kind of, you know, changed over the past couple of months. I've basically, like, logged off social media at, like, 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and then I wake up, and then I don't do anything for a while. And then I end up getting on at, like, 12. But for whatever reason, something told me to go on that morning. And then I saw someone – I don't remember who it was. I didn't see, like, an official post, but I just saw someone who was like, oh, Hogan's dead. And I'm like, oh.
That's very finally happened. Fact of way to say it.
Yeah. That was how it happened for me.
Yeah, no, I was waiting at Duncan, and you know, just
big Duncan guy started over getting here, man.
Yeah,
do you get the $6 meal deal all the time?
No, I usually just get the coffee. I don't get the food that often. Okay. But the food's pretty good. And $6 meal deal is a good deal.
It's so quality. I don't think people understand that, like, in this age of, you know, the $5 meal deals that McDonald's and Wendy's has, to get a instant breakfast, a medium coffee, and hash browns for $6 is so clutch. Yeah, so clutch. Exactly. Anyway, go ahead.
But, yeah, I was there, and, you know, suddenly just got a couple DMs just kind of sharing the link. And, yeah, I mean, you see it, and it's, like, no real reaction immediately, I guess, because just kind of the past year or past really 10 years at this point of him just kind of being the worst, kind of overweight everything immediately. So it was like, oh, well, that finally happened. That's crazy. And then, like, the immediate thought is, like, how is this going to look the rest of the day? Because, you know, right or wrong, you know, we're all online to a degree where it's like we're going to see a whole bunch of shit today now. And, yeah. So it was definitely a surprise. I mean, probably less of a surprise than it would have been, you know, a year ago at this time, because, you know, the rumors were out there. And just whenever he was appearing anywhere, he didn't look good either.
You watch the LA show back, and he's, you know, he's limping, he's not walking well. Like, obviously he's showing his age, you know, but yeah, it was not looking good towards the end.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was kind of a shock, but, like, you know, the immediate kind of reaction was just like, oh, I mean, that's crazy. Like, you know, there's gonna be a lot to discuss here, kind of like you talked about.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much within Hogan itself to impact, and I'm glad that I've been reading a lot about WWE history as it pertains to the boom in the 80s, Vince McMahon, Hulk Hogan, the NWO, WCW, the whole nine. And, you know, a lot of his stories that you've heard, whether, like, you know, in videos or shoot interviews, but you kind of get the added context of, you know, what's going on and the person that the people that they are, you know. And I think the biggest takeaway that I can say of, you know, my recent readings is that Hulk Hogan, anybody could have been Hulk Hogan at that time. You know, they tried to make it Dusty. Could Dusty have been that person? Potentially. They tried to do Superstar Billy Graham. I think we could say that failed in the way that Hulk Hogan achieved. You know, different kind of success, but he was never Hulk Hogan. Yeah. So I think, yes, there could have been anybody to be that person. Yes, he did finagle his way when he got to on top into some of those successes. But I would say Hulk Hogan's one of one in terms of that charisma. And Rocky III did so much for aiding to that aura. The fact that he was the guy to go up against Stallone in that little wrestling exhibition, it seems very trivial. But to the common person who is just looking for entertainment, you looked at Hulk Hogan through that lens and you saw someone that was larger than life. And when you get that from an entertainment standpoint as Rocky III, and this is Rocky in the 80s we're talking about. This is an astronomical figure. I even think to this day, now that I live in Philadelphia, I like really truly see how people treat this imaginary figure like he's bigger than Joe Frazier. but, you know, it really aided to his aura. And Vince capitalized on it as rightfully as he did, knowing that he was going to take over from his dad, and he needed that shepherd, you know. Could anybody have been that shepherd? Sure, but it was Hulk Hogan. I think Hulk Hogan had the cachet to do it. I mean, say what you want about the backstage politics. The man shepherded the first 9 WrestleManias. He has a role in each of the first 9 WrestleManias. I think the first 8 were kind of justified. The first 8 were kind of justified, maybe not the 9th, but it just sticks to the power of Hulkamania. And I mean, obviously, we were very young. We were WCW era Hogan when we got to see Hulkamania. But like, you know, we all have tapes. We all have family members that bought the DVDs, and we watched the fucking the hell out of them growing up before the WWE Network were even a thing. So it's not like we haven't been able to see the power of Hulkamania. Like the man was on fucking fire in a way that, like, yeah, it's been replicated through different eras, but it probably doesn't happen without him. So I want people not to ignore that fact. Wrestling isn't what it is today without him. 2 times over, by the way, because the fucking NWO. Yes. We'll get to NWO for Hulkamania's sakes. Wrestling ain't what it is without it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, like you said, that it's not complicated, and I think that, you know, maybe people use the word complicated for their own reasons or whatever, because it's sometimes hard to process that people die.
Right.
But I think that in this case, it's so indisputable that Hogan had an undeniable impact that it's really hard to ignore that. You just have to be equitable, I think, in talking about all the transgressions that he had, just in general. But as far as, you know, the 80s boom and whatnot, yeah, I mean, rock and wrestling helped out tremendously as well with Hogan and, you know, and Cyndi Lauper and Captain Lou Albano getting involved with all that other stuff, and Mr. T in the Mania main event. I mean, it's like you said, anybody probably could have been him, but he was certainly the right guy at the right time to get it done and take them to where they needed to go.
Let's play this game, because the other undeniable god of the 1980s is Ric Flair, correct?
Yes.
Let's switch roles. Let's say, for some fuck odd reason, Hulk Hogan was in Jim Crockett Promotions. God, I don't know what he would do there. And Ric Flair was in the Hulk Hogan role in WWE. Do you think the rock and wrestling era would have succeeded?
It's interesting, because I do think, on one hand, the Hogan boosts were obvious. On the other hand, you know, Flair had his own charisma about him. He had his own style about him. So perhaps getting involved with them would have been easy. Maybe it would have had a little bit of a different tone, I guess.
I agree.
And also, just because, like, you know, Flair owned the Carolinas and whatnot, but technically he was from Minnesota. So if they wanted to, you know, go into that aspect, they probably could have, with him, you know, seeming more relatable to those people versus being down in the South. Yeah, I think that would be a really interesting thing to think about, just because, you know, Hogan wasn't the workhorse that they really liked down in the NWA, I don't think, in terms of how he worked.
I'll give him a little bit of credit, though. Let me give Hogan a little bit of credit. His Japan shit's good. Like, go watch Hogan in Japan. Matter of fact, go watch 93 Hogan in Japan if you get opportunity. I think it's 92 or 93. I think it's 92, because he's still in the Federation at the time. And, like, you know, he's not wrestling in America, but he then goes off and goes excursion and fucks off in Japan for a little bit. Dude can work a better style of professional wrestling. He just didn't want to. And he knew that he didn't have to.
So that's for WWE, the thing, yeah, in the WWF, right, he didn't have to. Yeah.
Right. It was so easy to get over in America because wrestling fans back then were so fickle. Like, all you had to do was just, you know, flex and pose and do some big body. People were looking for the big boy shit, you know? Meanwhile, you know, you got to get over in Japan. All right, let me do some Uranagis. Let me do some technical shit. So, like, I give Hogan a bit of credit, you know, outside of America, he could work a little bit. He wasn't Fleto. And shout out to Flair for playing that shit out. For getting one last dig. It's like, yo, me and Hogan, you know, we go and have some hell of a matches. He wasn't Steamboat, though.
I mean, he's got a point. Those matches are good, and the Steamboat matches are better, so, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't, like, he was lying. Yeah, and you know, he eventually, the steroid scandal pops up, and, like, it's one of those things that, you have to be consistent in the way that you treat other people that have been caught up in the steroids trials. And, you know, who else has lied about using steroids? Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, potentially.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Like, there's only so much I can do with you lying on Arsenio Hall about using steroids when everybody was using them.
Exactly. And, like, it's not my, like, you know, I'm not the one that's going to feel the effects of it, positive or negative. So, like, just don't, you know, kind of is what it is.
Kill your wife and kid, and you know,
well, fine. Yeah.
But, like, you know, it was such a trivial thing, and, like, I understand why he lied. He did not have to. but I think the fact that he was willing to do that to save face for himself gave you a peek into Terry Bollea. And that was America's first peek into the person behind the persona of Hulk Hogan. And, you know, that's when the perception of who Hulk is changes. You know, like, the fan reception gets a lot colder and colder. You know, from like 90, from 90 on through his end of his tenure, there was that push and pull that I think only Cena has gotten since. Where it's not like, Hogan wasn't getting go away. He like, oh, we don't want to fucking see you. But there was definitely yo, you need to change your shit. You need to do something different. And, you know, the feeling that the money doesn't stop, you're hesitant to do it. And you fast forward a couple years later, now you're gone. And, you know, you get the call from Eric Bischoff while you're shooting Thunder in Paradise at MGM Studios. And then you wind up in WCW. And it worked for a little bit because, you know, what's old is new again. Like, everyone loves a retro throwback. But, you know, the pay-per-view numbers after the Flair match, and I think they did a trilogy in 94, right? You know, you
get Bash at the Beach and Clash of the Champions and then Halloween Havoc. That's two pay-per-views, but still, I mean, the pay-per-view numbers are both up.
The pay-per-view numbers are up. I think the Clash of the Champions did really well, but then you start to get into the other feuds, the Vaders and Kevin Sullivan's and even the Giant, and it was very clear, like, hey, we got to do something different. And thank God, man, I think every day since I've been reading the Bad Guys 1 book, you know, if that would have been Sting, would the NWO have worked? Most definitely not.
No. I mean, for a little bit, maybe, but yeah, no. Not overall, I don't think.
No.
Because then Hogan's probably in the Sting role, you know, with Savage and
everyone, Luger, and no one wants to see that shit.
Yeah, that's what they're getting away from, so.
Yeah, you know, this was the golden goose. Was Hulk Hogan turning heel? It wasn't Sting turning heel. And I want to say this real quick since we're, like, on the topic of the NWO. God bless Kevin Nash. I've been thinking a lot about Kevin Nash lately. We saw Nash at WrestleCon in Vegas a couple months back, and I was just so happy to see him sitting there. He's the last remaining member of the original NWO. And that's very, like, wild to say in retrospect. He's only like a couple of months younger than Scott Hall was, but you know, I'm so happy that Kevin Nash is here. He's such a great person. You know, and like if anybody owes condolences besides the family, it's Kevin Nash, man. So but yeah, you know, that they needed Hulk, you know, the two of them entering WCW on their own was powerful at that time, because no one knew what the fuck was going on. But it couldn't have been Sting, because Sting wasn't a WWE guy. Sting did not carry the mantle for Vince McMahon in New York. They needed that person to come into WCW and make it seem viable, and it had to be Hulk Hogan. And God damn, it was so wonderful to hate him. It's wonderful to hate him now because he's a bad person. But like in a wrestling perspective, like he took the ball and ran with that as a heel. Like it's very hard to think of like favorite heels and not include Hollywood Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, no, I mean, because he didn't just turn. He, you know, he went all in with it, because I think he kind of knew he had to. Otherwise, it would never work. And listen, I mean, his sense for the business, I know it's been questioned. It'll be questioned forever with the Sting thing, and I completely get that. But yeah. More often than not, I mean, he was pretty right. Like, you know, it was kind of like, you know, the guy Cena would refuse to work with and everyone got mad at him. And then you got a few years away from it and it's like, oh, he refused to work with a bunch of shitty guys. So, yeah, I mean, business sense, he did kind of get it, except the Sting thing. Because, I mean, the Goldberg thing was entirely his idea. Mm. And that pretty much made Goldberg. So,
I mean, I wish you would have did it on a pay-per-view. But, like, yeah, you know, like, you know, credit to Hogan on a lot of fronts, you know, during the heel run. Like the creative control part is I want to say it's his fault. Like whoever signed him, whether it was, I mean, obviously it was Eric Bischoff, but whoever decided, hey, you allow him to have creative control, that's their fault. You allowed the inmates to rule the asylum, and when you allow that, you get what you get. You know, was he a tyrant in that aspect? Yes. Does he deserve blame for being a union buster? Yes. Does he deserve blame for putting himself over a lot of other, like a lot of his peers? Yes. He had that in his contract. Those fuckers gave it to him. You can only say that much about that. But you know, yeah, like that I always rank the NWO as my favorite faction. You know, I people, obviously WWE, you know, shifted the narrative to make people think DX was bigger. Like, hell no, it was the NWO.
Yeah.
You know, everyone was, you know, walking around in the black and white t-shirts doing the too sweet. You know, you could recall the moment that, you know, Hogan came out the United Center with Dennis Rodman and Michael Buffer's playing him out. Like that was strength, you know. So like that faction does not work without Hulk, and you know, eventually he comes back to WWE. He has the match with Rock, and you know, we've talked about that run ad nauseum, so I won't go like too much into it. You know, you now get to reality show Hulk Hogan, and you know, the family shit, and like it was so disheartening to hear the stuff with Brooke lately. Like obviously, like, you know, him and Nick, if there's that, but
yeah,
you know, I can't imagine, you know, God bless Brooke having to go through everything she's going through and not having your father by your side. I feel awful in a sense that, you know, Hulk just would rather fucking stump for, you know, Donald Trump, then that goes. But you know, I understand family issues is family issues. Everybody's got family issues. You know, when you take into account what we know about the Gawker shit and what you said on it, you know, that was I think that's the part that no one really gave a fuck to care about, was the person who's most embarrassed by this is Brooke.
Yes.
I never heard anybody mention Brooke's name in that.
No, and I mean, like, that's kind of the case for a lot of stuff he did, you know, ever since the reality show. Like, he was trying to help her, but a lot of the stuff that he wound up doing, even, you know, before that tape, on the show or whatever, how contrived that might be, or even getting her in TNA, ended up kind of just being for the worse for her.
Mm-hmm. Backfiring tremendously. Like, God bless the Paul Wall song, because I forgot that existed until this week. But I mean, you know, it was just, it's the selfishness of Terry Bollea that comes out during the final 20 years of his life. You know, like I can remember sitting there and watching the, I mean, watch the video. Don't think I watched the video first and foremost. I heard what was said in the footage. And then from then on, it was like, okay, that's it. You know, because it was so unabashed in the way that it came out, because you were behind closed doors. And like, I'm not foolish. You know, I don't think that everybody, you know, is that glowing and that loving about other people in private. You know, like, there's kind of that switch in me that's like, I always think the worst of you, you know.
Yeah.
While, you know, in private, while you're putting on whatever front in person, until I actually know who you are. Right. But it was the disgust that, you know, he portrayed, and then the doubling down, not necessarily doubling down, but the to not feel contrite about it was the ending for me.
Yeah, he didn't double down, but he also refused to really own it.
Yes.
When he clearly had to own it.
All you had to do is be like, hey, man, like, show some contrition. So that, like, hey, I made a really bad error of judgment in the words that, you know, in the words I should use and the feelings that I portrayed, and I apologize, and woo-woo-woo. You know, and as soon as Mark Henry and New Day, you know, expressed that they didn't, you know, the meaning that they had, and that his overall takeaway was, hey, watch what you post, or watch what you say, buddy. You know, that was kind of it, you know. So, yeah, it was not complicated at all for me. Like, did I do a little lap and a couple of fist pumps? And, you know, not that I'm, like, happy the man is dead, but the saga's over. Not having to deal with the saga anymore is the positive in this for me, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a really interesting thing that happened was, like, kind of people were policing the reactions to it to an extent. Like, there's a good reason that a large group of people are happy that he's dead. Yeah. Like, and I don't think it's cool to police that, especially, you know, as a white guy too, especially, like, obviously, you know, black people are going to feel different about Hogan. I don't like him either, obviously, but I can clearly, you know, understand where it comes from. And it just, you know, at the same time though, a lot of people, when they did say, oh, it was complicated, a lot of that wasn't good enough for a lot of people. They wanted, you know, the issues to be brought out when everyone said anything, which, you know, I do get that too, but everyone does kind of know what they're talking about. And I think, I don't know, do you think there's a way to remember him as a wrestler with separating all this? I mean, we've watched, you know, Benoit for years, and yeah. I'm not saying I want to do it. I just, do you think there's a way to do it, either of you?
I'll let Chris go first, if you have a response.
I feel like this goes back to what I was saying before. You can do whatever you want. Just be equitable about it.
Right.
Don't glorify the wrestler over the person in this case, especially when the person has done horrible things and has hurt a lot of people. And I think that you can choose to react how you want to, but leave someone alone if they choose to not, in my opinion. I think that, like I said, people are going to do what they're going to do, and, you know, people are going to react how they're going to react. They're going to watch what they're going to watch. In my opinion, like, just be equitable about it. Be equitable in how you talk about it, how you say things, and how you choose to remember Hulk Hogan.
I echo those sentiments exactly. You know, I respect if your viewpoint of Hulk Hogan is through the lens of how he made you feel. I think where you can lose my respect is if you ignore what he did and, you know, the person that he was.
Bingo.
You can acknowledge both. I think they're, you know, let's just sit here and doing it now, man. Hulk Hogan provided me some of some of the joyous moments from my childhood. But as soon as I grew in as an adult and I realized who he was, that was kind of it for me, you know, like, but this is also an undeniable, you know, figure in American culture. That's it's impossible not to acknowledge what he did. That's not giving him flowers, but it's stating the truth. And I think, you know, you can allow yourself to state both truths and feel, you know, multiple things on this. Like, I feel sad for the person that I've been mourning for a very long time, because I've been mourning that those emotions for Hulk for a long time. But this is what it is. You know, this is the person that he chose to be, and this is how, you know, this is how his lasting memory will be, is being in that stadium in Los Angeles and getting pulled out of the building. And it's not because of anything that we did or we chose to do. It's because of Hulk. So, you know, that's the funeral of Hulk Hogan. You know, thanks for the memories, I guess. All right. We got SummerSlam this weekend. I got to stretch over to get my goddamn phone, because I switched places while we were doing this. We got the first two nights of SummerSlam. It's the first two nights of SummerSlam. Does SummerSlam need to be two nights? Maybe not. What do you think?
We'll see, I guess.
We'll see for sure.
I think it's clear that they're trying to, like, give a bone to the cities that are never getting WrestleManias ever again.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. I think they're giving a little bit of a bone to some of the wrestlers also. I mean, TLC got left off of Mania, and now they're having another TLC match at SummerSlam 25 years after the first one, and we're getting a Becky Lyra singles match. We're getting we're not getting an Io Rhea singles match. Actually, we're getting another triple threat, which is fine because of how well the first one went and with the story that they're telling there, which I think is good. But yeah, ultimately, I think it'll be successful. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it should be. I mean, you know, if there was an event to go to two nights after WrestleMania, SummerSlam kind of made sense for the next one. I propped it up as the second biggest show. A lot of people have said, you know, maybe the Rumble, so you can do the Rumbles on both nights. But I don't think it's a bigger deal.
I feel like the Rumble is a one-night show.
Yeah. The Rumble has one at five matches and just do the two Rumbles. Who cares? That's what everyone's there for anyway. So
exactly. And, like, it feels like it's just too, like, you're putting too much focus on both Rumbles, and you don't have to do that when they're both the Royal Rumble. They're going to get the attention that they both have earned because – that's the match that it is.
I have one thought. Yeah. What if you did a two night King and Queen of the Ring, and you did
that could be fun.
You did your qualifiers, semis on the main show, and a main event, a big main event, and then Sunday is the rest of your main card plus the two finals.
You can do that.
That'd be pretty cool. I don't know that they could do a stadium for it, but...
right, like, I think you could do an arena for that, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Anyway, that was just some random thoughts. Cardi B is supposedly going to be the hostess of the event. I have not heard from Cardi B, so if anybody can find Cardi B and let her know that she's hosting the show, I would very much like to see her on TV this week. First show...
She's been going back and forth with Bailey.
Oh, that's right. She has been going back and forth with Bailey. She's been hanging out with fucking Stefan Diggs too. So, this is the third event in WWE history to be held at MetLife Stadium. Stadium opened back in 2011, I think. WrestleMania 29 and WrestleMania 35, both boof ass events. I was there. We were all there at 35 actually, and that was fun to get home to.
Yes, so, we were.
Not trying to do that again. This is also the fourth SummerSlam to take place in East Rutherford itself. Obviously, you know, New York has held SummerSlam 1988, the very first one, 1998. There's another time in the 2000s, I think. I just can't pinpoint it. Oh, yeah, all the times it was held in Brooklyn.
2002?
2002 was Long Island.
2002 was Long Island. I was getting to that. I was trying to say New York proper. Because all the Brooklyn shows, you got Long Island. I forgot about the Long Island one. But the fourth one in East Rutherford, 89, 97, 2007 were all in East Rutherford. 2007 was in East Rutherford? Why do I think
it was?
Yeah, Chris went to that.
I was there, yeah.
I don't know why there. I thought that was in last... Indianapolis. For, no, 2008 was Indianapolis. That's
2008 was Indy, yeah.
Yeah, they did the really cool movie trailer, a movie like theater stage in
Indianapolis. Was weird because it was in Indianapolis, and then they went to LA the following year, which it would have worked better for, but you know.
Yeah. Let's get to the cards, if you will. Why is that?
Yes.
There's a TBA, and I'm sure that's going to be on Sunday. That's the six-pack TLC match for the WWE Tag Team Championships that we mentioned.
Yeah, I've seen Sunday.
Wyatt Six, Dexter Lumis, and Joe Gacy defending against DIY, Andrade and Rey Fénix, Fraxium, Motor City Machine Guns, and Street Profits. I'm very excited for this one, although I don't see a reason why Wyatt Six would lose, even though this is a very easy way. Or you just get the belts off Wyatt Six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to change it, then this is obviously the way to do it, because they don't really fit in traditional tag matches in the tag division. But So, yeah, I mean, I don't know, this should be fine. Like, we've kind of seen this at WrestleMania the past few years, where there's an insane amount of people in these ladder matches now, which is always alarming because, you know, there's only so much room. But, like, you know, they're usually always good. I don't think it'll be as good as the TLC match from SmackDown earlier this year, but like they're also
there's 16
left time. You know, there's a lot more to do. Like, it is what it is. It's not a 3-team match, but it's cool. You know, it's an ode to the first one from SummerSlam 2000.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think it's cool that they're doing this. I don't actually mind the fact that they did a TLC match a couple months ago and are doing one again. I think that match type over the past couple of years is actually like decelerated greatly.
Oh yeah.
After we had years of the gimmick event, they got so derivative with it that we literally added the word stairs to a pay-per-view one time. So now that it hasn't happened so frequently, I don't mind this happening again. I think this is good. I think this is fun for the tag division. You know, I think that Raw's tag division is the one that's lacking. SmackDown's isn't, but that's why you do a match like this with the SmackDown tag teams. I feel like the Wyatts are going to lose, but I just don't know to who. If you're going to ask me who I'd pick, I'm going to go off the board and say Andrade and Rey Fénix.
It's not a bad pick.
I like the presentation.
I think it's... I do too. I think that's also like a really good tag team. I know people are waiting for them to put Fénix and Penta together, but I don't think they're in any hurry to move over and make them a tag guy. So, yeah, the Andrade thing's working. It gets them on TV more too, obviously, and it's a cool presentation, like Pierce said. And, you know, in the tag division, you know, those are two guys that maybe don't want to lose all the time, and in the tag division, they really don't need to lose. So,
I agree. I think they'll probably lose because this will be the match that they do lose. But I'm going to go Wyatt Six. And the only reason I'm going to go Wyatt Six is because Mr. Joe Gacy's from down the road in Franklinville, Gloucester County, New Jersey. So this is a technically hometown, even though South Jersey and North Jersey are two separate states. This is technically a hometown win for Joe Gacy. That's the only reason I'm going for it. I don't care. Clearly, I don't care.
Damn, that's crazy.
Fucking
stadium show, Joe Gacy. Who could have thought?
Who would have fucking thought that CZW Joe Gacy from
good for him though. He's been wrestling for 20 years or whatever.
Yeah, but good for both of them. Fucking TNA posted Dexter Lumis, you know, hanging around in TNA. Sam Shaw. Good for both of them. Night one, August 2nd, WWE Women's Championship, Tiffany Stratton and Jade Cargill. You know, I want to say Jade, but I could see this kind of lingering for a little bit. What do you think?
I think they might just have to go with Jade here. I don't know, because it really, like, it hasn't been super focused on SmackDown. Like, it does kind of seem like they might be stretching it out a little bit, honestly.
Right. They're kind of doing like a strange bedfellows kind of thing.
Yeah, and everyone kind of thought Naomi would get involved, and like, you know, obviously that didn't pan out. So I don't know when that decision was made, if that was the plan the whole time, and, you know, or now they're just kind of changing things on the fly and they're going to stretch this out a little bit. But like, you know, Tiffany did that thing at the Mets game or whatever. It was with Nia. It wasn't even with Jade, which I thought was weird since, you know, the pay-per-view's out there. Could have plugged it. So yeah, I mean, they might stretch this out a little bit the more you think about it. So yeah, I will go with Tiffany, I think. Like, because you know, Jade hasn't lost yet either, obviously. So you get her a loss in a way that maybe isn't clean. And I don't. Which one's a heel? Which one's a face? Are we
seriously?
I don't think there really is one right now.
So that kind of makes it easy too. If you want to do like
it does
interfere, it does. And you turn Tiff or whatever. So yeah, I don't know, Tiffany.
I don't think there's a need to really turn anybody in this match. I think that the thing that intrigues me about this match really is just because of what happened last year. They already set a precedent with the King and the Queen of the Ring winners right away that both of them won their matches on launch. Nia beat Bayley and Gunther beat Damian Priest.
Sure.
So now we have Jade Cargill and Cody Rhodes, who are the king, who are the Queen and King of the Rings. So are they going to go 2-for-2, or are they going to go 1-for-2, or God forbid, are they going to go 0-for-2? I don't think they're going to go 0-for-2. The match that it could happen is Tiff Jade, but I thought that about Bayley Nia last year. I'm going to go with Jade here because I think that they're going to keep up that trend because ultimately, if they're making the reward a title match, you kind of do have to be fruitful with it at first, at least. If it's not already someone's story that they've come up short in the past, and then this is their opportunity, but then maybe they drop the ball and they can't do it and adds to them. This is straight up. I think Tiff has done an incredible job as champion for the last 200 plus days, but I think that now she's in a spot where after she loses the title, she's still going to be compelling. The crowd's still going to really like her, and she's still going to be uplifted. So I don't think that she necessarily loses anything by losing the title. I think they're going to anoint Jade. I'm going to go with Jade.
That's fair. And I mean, as far as my thing about, oh, there's no build, like Jade won it 2 weeks ago.
No, I agree. There wasn't much of a build to Bayley Nia last year.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, maybe you don't need much of a build with the King of the Ring winners because it's kind of cut and dry. So that could be it, too.
I think that in a way you can do it. Again, it's just, I think that right now what they're doing is they're kind of setting the table for that. And then maybe next year when they do the two nights in Minneapolis, like they said, they were into since they built up to that. Maybe that's the one where it turns into a story since they've been kind of building to that moment.
There you go.
We got tag team match that seemingly no one wants to see. It's Randy Orton and Jelly Roll, country music star, versus Drew McIntyre and Logan Paul. The faces are going to win.
Easy call.
Does Jelly Roll hit an RKO?
I was just going to ask that question.
Listen, man, I think everyone's being too hard on Jelly Roll. Like,
they are so being hard on Jelly Roll. He seems like a good dude.
He does. People seem to like him. And if you're going to do the celebrity thing, they're in the same match. So, like, it's kind of inoffensive. Like, if you want to see Randy and Drew wrestle, I think they did on Saturday Night's Main Event, didn't they?
They did, yeah. They did. Yeah,
so, they like, did. I don't know. Everyone kind of went overboard about their reaction to that whole thing. Jelly Roll hit a black hole slam on SmackDown. Yeah. So I'm all in. I think he will do an RKO. I hope he does another black hole slam. But yeah, give me the faces.
Yeah, I hope Jelly Roll hits an RKO on Logan Paul, and then that's how they win the match. That would be funny.
That'd be really funny. Yeah, you're here for entertainment, not for seriousness.
Although that Jimmy Kimmel thing ruled.
That was a good use of Jimmy Kimmel. Like, people give that credit. That was a great use of Jimmy Kimmel. Moving on, for the World Heavyweight Championship, it's seemingly not main eventing. Gunther defends.
I think
against,
it is. I don't think it's order.
I've seen. I know it's not the order, but I've seen the tag match in the promotionals. So I've been wondering if the tag match is the main event. I would rather the tag match open. That seems more like the opener to me.
That would be a better opener. That would be a much better opener, but whatever. That's the thing. You know who's in the match, so.
Well, I guess my question is if let's say Roman Reigns, Jey Uso, Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, everyone's predicting that there's like some kind of big thing happening. What would be the big thing?
I guess Dwayne. But I don't even know if he's going to be around.
Brother, he's got movies and stuff.
That's the thing. So if that main events, I think it's just because one person is in that match, and well,
I think it might open, and they'll have.
I think
go, yeah, take a fucking private jet back to Los Angeles, please.
Yeah, if I was doing this, that match would open and Gunther Punk would close night one.
Just like brother, you sacrificed a great fucking build for what? Like I'm like whatever. Am I will I pop when I see him? Yeah, probably. But like, come the fuck on, dude. Fucking yeah. Hell. Let's backtrack to Punk and Gunther. If it main events, I think Punk wins.
Yeah, I think it's time.
I think it's time as well.
He's proven that his body can hold up. He's proven yep. that he's not going to cause trouble anymore.
Yep.
Until he does one day. But yeah, I think
fucking it's children. Yeah, because everyone's yeah, fucking 30 years younger than you, dude.
Because the thing here, I think it's not so much asking what Punk does, because I think Punk is going to feud with Seth, whether he has the championship or not right now. That's what they've basically earmarked. I would wonder what Gunther's going to do if he just wins this match. Because if he just beats CM Punk and he's still the world champion, I feel like you're still kind of underselling him by not having him have that big belt.
No, there's no other babyface on Raw unless it's going to be thing, Roman, yeah. And it's not going to be Roman.
So. No, it's not going to be Roman because he's not going to fight for that title, and there's nobody else that he can really face. So ultimately, I think that – and another thing to that point about Seth and Punk, all Seth has to do is say Punk is only champion because he wasn't around to make it not happen, and boom, there you go.
Mm.
So I think that ultimately Punk has proven himself worthy. He's checked off all the necessary boxes that he had to check off when he came back in November of 2023. Now is the time. Make him champion.
Let's go CM Punk. The other two matches that are on the show, we got Sami Zayn and Karrion Kross. A lot of talk has been made about Kross's contract situation. Listen, I hope they get it taken care of. Because Karrion Kross, like, there's two dudes right now who people fucking swear up and down that they don't like. But then you hear TV or stream, because main event stream, you hear TV or streaming, and the live crowd is going over for them. And that's Austin Theory, and that's Karrion Kross. So give him some pull, man. Give him some leeway to work, please. I would like to see more Karrion Kross because I think he's doing good work right now. And I can give credit to Sami Zayn because Sami Zayn knows, hey, man, I'm not in the main event scene. All right, let me work somebody and let me get them over.
Yeah, I mean, I think the gimmick is pretty interesting. The matches still aren't very good. But listen, this is a big moment, the sink or swim moment for him. Everyone wants him so bad, you know. He clearly is probably pushing for it. Like, go out there in a stadium show and see what you can do. It's not going to be, you know, the most important match of the night. It's not going to be, it's going to be somewhere in the middle of the card. So they're going to have probably their work cut out for him, honestly. I mean, you know, people get up for Sammy, but like, you're going to be probably coming after a bigger match than yours. So yeah, go see what you can do. And, you know, if he can do something here, then maybe I'm incorrect about him and everyone is right.
Well, you know, you said it wasn't an important match. I think it's an important match for him. Yes. But what I will say is that I don't think, with regards to the contract thing, I don't know anything. What I will say is I don't think, knowing how they operate, I don't know that they would put Karrion Kross on SummerSlam if they knew he wasn't re-signed, at least a verbal commit. Maybe the ink hasn't dried. Maybe the contract hasn't processed yet. But that just doesn't seem like that. Plus the match at Night of Champions, also, it seems like these two things are dead giveaways. He's suddenly getting time and suddenly getting, you know, matches on big cards when he wasn't before. Like, okay, maybe they're not doing that at the tail end of negotiations to try and sweetheart it or whatever. I think that this is just a reward now. Maybe he already told them that he was going.
Yeah, because I mean, like, a singles match with Sami Zayn isn't really a send off either for like.
No, it's not. It's not a send off, and they're not building it like one. And it's not like, you know, again, it's not like they do that to react to people who they want to let, you know, peter out or anything like that. We've seen how they do send offs nowadays. I mean, we've seen it multiple times over. The past couple of years, where it's been like with Brian and with Edge, where they got send offs, and you know, they had Ricochet get beat up by Bron Breakker and then never be seen again. So I feel like we would know. And at the same time, I think we should interpret this as he's staying because he got a match at SummerSlam. As for who wins this, I guess I'm going to go with Sammy because I want him to win. I don't know what a win does for either side because I don't know where either man is going after this, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. I see that. Where do we go? Oh yeah, the other match. Charlotte and Alexa Bliss, who I'm really enjoying as a tag team together. I feel like they gotta win this match against Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez. I think you gotta go with the hot hand over whatever you're building with Judgment Day over there.
Yeah, Rob, if you wanna go, it's fine.
Well, yeah, I mean they're doing this Judgment Day thing where they all have titles and that's fine. Obviously that's been a fun visual, but yeah, I mean you don't need to keep that going for this. I mean people are cheering Charlotte in 2025. They somehow made this work. She looks happy to be there. Listen, this match could be very good. Charlotte in a stadium has proven, you know, if she's motivated, and I think she's motivated right now. Raquel, Kevin Nash told her to work more like a big, and now she's incredible.
Kevin Nash told you suck, and then you started working. This is another reason why Kevin Nash is a gem. I love you, Kevin Nash.
Yeah, I honestly, if I may interject about that, I thought that it was a mature response by Raquel to do that, to react like that, because she basically said, like, oh, if Kevin Nash is saying that, I need to pay attention. Thank you, Mr. Nash. I'll get back to work. And she did.
It's the guy that you're emulating in storyline. Yeah. And he's telling you, hey, you want to get over like I did? Here's what you need to do. And she's been doing that.
Yep.
Yeah. But Roxanne's obviously excellent.
Yeah, Roxanne is Roxanne.
Alexa is Alexa. I mean, like,
yeah,
this match should rule. I do think Charlotte and Alexa are going to win, and they're going to keep this team going for a little bit. I don't know what the end game is, or if there even is one. Probably Charlotte turning on Alexa, but I wouldn't be in any hurry to do it. I wouldn't either. So,
no, you can.
I think both might just do this for a while.
Yeah, and you know, again, this is a tendency thing, right? So I think that they've done a good job with Raquel and Roxanne. This is actually some matchup of things that they do. They love giving all their factions a lot of titles that they've done with Judgment Day like three times now. And they love using the tag titles as vehicles for stars who have nothing else to do. Charlotte and Alexa fit that bill. I think they win the match.
All right, let's move over tonight too. We got five matches current. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we would talk about the TLC match. I'll probably be on this show. We're going to work bottom up here for the Intercontinental Men's Championship. It's Dominic Mysterio and AJ Styles. First, love seeing AJ Styles in TNA again. I bought the TNA annual subscription, so I'm excited to watch more TNA. Well, I decided to watch more AEW too, because AEW is on a little bit of a fucking roll right now. Shout out Tony Storm. Yeah, wrestling is really good right now if you haven't been paying attention. However, AJ Styles, you're going to get into TNA at some point. You're going to wrestle for the X Division Championship or the TNA World Championship and kind of, you know, it was so good to see hear I Am I Am again. So that being said, while AJ, I'm happy to see you in TNA, I am really fucking happy to see Dom in AAA. Which I want to go another side note. Marcel Bartel, whatever your fucking name is now, you are El Grande Americano.
Ludwig Kaiser, yeah.
Ludwig. Mr. Tiffany Stratton, you are El Grande Americano now. And that's no disrespect to Chad Gable, because Chad Gable played it excellently. But you, sir, the fact that you know Spanish and you're able to go out to fucking AAA and get them over with you. Great work, my friend. Great work, my friend. Dom clearly coming for the mega championship. I think he gets it. I would love two belts Dom here. Anyway, he's winning this match. He is, man.
He did it. He's over, dude.
Good for him.
I can't. Honestly, one of the things I'm most excited for Survivor Series is what he does, because he's going to be a star there. And I mean, I think Ray's going to have a big match too, but like, it's going to be a moment for Dom.
That would actually be, do you do that match? Do you do Ray versus Dom for a title at that? That's a, or because we've seen it enough.
That would really be something, though. Oh my god!
I think you could do. It really depends because if Cena's a face by then, they could do Ray and Cena in a tag against someone too, and you know that's cool. Like, because I don't know what Cena's gonna look like as a face. I'm sure we'll get into that over the next. But anyway. Yeah, I think Dom's going to win here. It's cool that AJ's getting another stadium match. I think he's been pretty good the past couple of years. I know there was a lot of concern that maybe he didn't have it anymore after he had the foot injury, but I think ever since coming back against Cody, he's been very good. And yeah, I mean, this is a big spot for him, and it's been a really fun storyline to see play out, and I'm glad they're finally getting to do it here. I'm kind of glad they didn't end up doing it at Night of Champions because... You know, they had some more time to flesh it out, and it's going to be good.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be so fun. So fun. I would like to see Dom win the Mega Championship as well. I thought that was cool that he's, you know, doing work down there and that he's over like crazy. I think Dom wins here. I don't think there's a reason to have him drop right now just because, you know, he's, you know, red hot right now, so I have no issue with keeping the title on him right now.
U.S. Championship, a steel cage match. Nobody gets in. Jacob Fatu and Solo Sikoa. I think Jacob wins his title back. He's getting the hometown merch. That tells you a lot about where they put this man right now in the pantheon of professional.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I think he's going to win his title back, too. I still don't love him as a babyface, but, like, I know why they did it. They didn't really have much of a choice, and it doesn't need to be forever. And he even, you know, depending on who he's feuding with, doesn't need to go, you know, full true babyface all the time. It just works here because, you know, Solo wronged him personally. But, yeah, I think these two are going to crush it. This is a great stipulation. Solo has a cage match history and the really good one against Cody, and... he knows how to work it, and it's going to be good. Looking forward to it. They're going to throw each other into the cage and all that. I like when they do stuff like that, and they're going to get physical, I believe.
Will we see Jacob do a moonsault off the cage?
Yes.
I think so, too.
Absolutely.
I do think so also. I think, honestly, that could be how he wins this match.
Yeah.
All right.
So I look forward to this.
No disqualification, no count out, last chance match. A lot of fucking stipulations for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. If Becky wins, Lyra can no longer challenge for the championship as long as Becky is champion.
Correct.
Might be time for Babyface to get her belt back.
Yes, very much so. This is what it's been building to. This is what it's been leading to. Lyra's going to win, as she should. I've been looking forward to this one since their last encounter at Money in the Bank. Obviously, the Bayley inclusion has made things even better in terms of just the general ring work with these three. They obviously love working each other. They haven't missed yet, and they're not going to miss in this case. The thing that – the element that I find interesting that I've been thinking about is the Bayley element here. There is no count out. There is no disqualification. She's been heavily involved in this entire thing. I think she could rear her head because I don't think that she's not going to be there. If she's not, that's fine. Because then they'll just finish this out on their own as they should. The only thing is that from Bailey's perspective, that stipulation, it can kind of go, you know, one way or another here. Like, okay, if she goes out there and tries to cost Lyra the match so that she can't challenge for the title and she can, then it's like, okay, did you do that for that reason, or are you in cahoots with Becky?
Right.
And then if Becky loses, which she will, is Bayley going to still be around? Is she going to show up in the rematch there? Because again, you know, whose side are we on? How prideful are we becoming? Because I think that Bayley is becoming very prideful in herself and saying things like she needs this to happen or whatever. It's all very interesting. But at the end of the day, this is Lyra's moment. This is Lyra's match to win. And she will be champion after this.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know the point of, you know, adding the stipulation. She can't challenge for the title again if she's going to lose, because, you know, that would make sense.
It's just it's a setup to mirror what happened at Backlash or whatever it was.
And I do think the no disqualification part does mean Bayley's going to get involved, because, you know, I don't think they're going to lean heavily on the weapons or whatever, because I think Tina and Cody are going to do that. So, yes, you know, if you're going to have two no disqualification matches, you have to make them different. And that's probably the way to do that one, or maybe fight in the crowd with the no count out stuff or whatever. Yeah, so that'll be good. I do think Bayley's going to get involved as well. If not, I think we'll see her on Raw getting involved. I think that's pretty clearly the next feud. So I think Lyra's going to win. I wonder if they're going to tell Becky she can't wear red and yellow anymore in light of recent events.
Yeah, I'm very interested in that, too. I think you might want to retire that. Just,
yeah, she's probably
pointing into the bit. Point got across.
But yeah, give me Lyra.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Lyra as well. Yeah, made me eat crow. Sorry I said all that shit before. Was that Elimination Chamber? Yeah, man. Women's World Championship triple threat match. The new champion, Naomi, just subbing out the black girl against Io Sky and Rhea Ripley. Naomi wins. I think this won't be as good as WrestleMania, but it will still be a very good and fun match. Naomi is going to sneak by. I'm just very interested in seeing how. Because now she's got the belt, she's just going to do some like piece of shit thing. So I'm very interested in seeing. She's done such fucking amazing work lately. So like, I'm interested in seeing the new layers that now champion Naomi has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, she's obviously not going to lose her first title defense, I wouldn't imagine. So it is going to be really the story of the match to see how she's able to, you know, are Rhea and Io going to focus on each other too much again, like the problem they kind of ran into before, or, you know, what's going to happen there. So, yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it might open night two. And I'm going to go with Naomi.
And
I will go with Naomi as well. I think that, like you said, this isn't going to be – I don't think this is going to be Mania. I don't know if this is going to be Evolution. Both of those matches were all-timers. Maybe it will be. I mean, you got two people in Rhea and Io who every time that they've wrestled this year against each other, it's been phenomenal. Io might be the best workhorse on planet Earth right now. And Naomi has been fantastic herself. She adds a nice element here. It's very intrigued to see how she works with them, because – she's a veteran herself, and she knows some things. They may do some stuff that both Rhea and Io have never pulled off before, because they never really worked with Naomi like that before. So this is going to be a really interesting match to see how things go. And I think that ultimately, you know, the aftermath here is also interesting, because we're going to probably have a draft soon. You've got Stephanie Vaquer waiting in the wings to challenge the winner of this match in Paris. I don't think she's going to get involved in this match, but it's a matter of, okay, who are you going to have face her? And, you know, they did the Io and Stephanie thing the past couple of weeks where they got interrupted. They did the Io and Rhea match where Naomi interrupted them. They're telling good stories that way. I'm definitely intrigued in this match, but I'm much more intrigued on what happens after too.
And the big match, the main event for the WWE Championship, John Cena defending against Cody Rhodes, rematch at WrestleMania, where hopefully they get the stink off. I just think John Cena's going to win.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, listen, the Cena thing, I think, has reached a natural endpoint. You still have the second kind of half of the year to make him a babyface. I think we kind of said all along that's what people are going to want to see. And I mean, if he just beats Cody twice, I don't really know who ultimately beats Cena. I mean, the play I think might be, you know, Cody beating Cena and then Seth cashing in on Cody. Maybe not SummerSlam, but I think, yeah, you know, I think
that was the original plan. That's kind of ruined.
Yeah. I don't think he would have come out during the match. I think Cody would, you know, genuinely beat Cena and then, you know, go from there. But yeah, I think you could have Seth cash in on Cena instead somewhere down the line, and that's how Cena turns back face. But I don't think that really plays as well, honestly. Like, I think he just needs to lose and not be around the title picture and just kind of do whatever as a babyface for the rest of the year.
I guess my question is now, like, how do you properly transition that? And, you know, hey, you insert Dwayne and we do the whole Cody heel thing. I don't think that's necessarily the way to do it either. Like, how do we just naturally progress back to him being, you know, good guy John Cena? We just say fuck it all, he's John Cena, and go full Vince with it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. I guess there's no easy way to do it. I think you could do it where it's just, oh, he's John Cena again and no one will really care, but like, that is a big risk because it could backfire.
It's very insulting to the last, you know, 7-8 months of this whole thing.
Yeah, but now that The Rock is, you know, gone for the immediate future and Travis Scott is gone, the whole thing's kind of ruined anyway.
Yeah.
Well, ultimately, I think that Cody will win. And I think that this would have been a lot, like you said, if Seth catches in, then that's easier. But he's hurt now, and they don't know when he's going to be back. I don't know if he's going to be gone for much longer, but I feel like SummerSlam is just totally out of the picture for him to cash in. And that, I think that definitely would have gotten it. But now that he's absent, it makes more sense for Seth to possibly, you know, cash in on Punk to keep that going. So it'll be interesting to see how they thread that needle. But I think Cody wins here.
And that is SummerSlam. That's Hulk Hogan. That's Ruthless Aggression, man. We appreciate you for sliding with us this week. Enjoy the big pay-per-view coming up. Training camp is underway, man. That means 79th of Hallis. That means King's Landing. It means all the other football shows that we do. So keep into Barber's Chair, High and Outside for trade deadline news coming up. First Black Champ for any other wrestling. I'm sure they're going to do Hogan too, because they're old niggas. They can tell you more about the Hulkamania era. We you know, we just came here to just shit on it, but you know. Support the Barbershare and everything that we do, man. All I got to say, man, enjoy SummerSlam. For Robin, Chris, and Pierce, we will see you guys later.